Today's episode may contain topics considered graphic in nature. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to Tennessee Roads, recorded in the foothills of the Great Smoky Mountains.
Well, hey there, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Tennessee Roads Podcast. My name is Dusty, and I'm your guide as we typically hitchhike through all the towns and communities that make up the foothills of the Great Smoky Mountains. But as some of you guys may have seen on social media, we pushed back this episode a little bit to air on September 11th of this year. There was a couple of reasons for that. I had done some recording for this episode, and I just really wasn't feeling it. I wasn't able to provide what I wanted to, which was to honor and respect those that were affected by this event 20 years ago. So I decided just to start over completely. We've cut out everything, all the extra fluff, and we just want to share the story of 9/11. I'm not going to go into all of the modern day things that are happening in the Middle East now. You know, we spent the last 20 years of our life, the majority of my life, in the aftermath of 9/11. And we'll get there one day and we'll talk about it. But things are happening now that I don't want to talk about, I guess you could say. It's a lot to sit here and try to discuss topics like this. You know, you think that it's easy to talk about history, but when you've watched it unfold in front of your eyes and as a child, and you watch it unfold now as an adult, it's crazy to see people that you knew and you grew up with and you went to high school with, and they're not even on this planet anymore. But we'll save that for another episode. So my goal today, guys, is to explain to you all what happened in New York City on that day, in Washington, and all those places. I want to share this with you so you all can understand how that day went, what that day was like if you were in New York. So come with me, pull up a chair, and let's talk about it. September 11th, 2001, that was a day that a lot of people say the earth stood still. It was primary election day in New York City. The polls opened at 6 a.m. for the election of mayor, public advocate, and other public offices. Now, it was a clear morning where sunshine would reach from Long Island, New York, all the way to Virginia. Hurricane Erin was off the East Coast, and the United States mostly wanted to know which direction she was going to go. A cold front had moved in and had actually started to move Hurricane Erin out to sea. But before meteorologists could announce the weather, the entire world would be watching another news story. At 8:46 a.m., American Airlines Flight 11, a Boeing 767 loaded with 20,000 gallons of jet fuel, crashed into the North Tower of the World Trade Center in New York City, New York. There were 76 passengers, 11 crew, and 5 hijackers. News agencies from across the country went live, And for the next 18 minutes, coverage rang out of what we thought was America's worst aviation accident. The impact of the flight left a large hole covering several floors starting around the 80th floor of this building. It was known that the crash had killed hundreds and left hundreds more trapped in the floors above immediately. Evacuations of both the North and South Towers began immediately. But at 8:55 a.m., a Port Authority Fire and Safety employee in the South Tower made an announcement over the tower's public address system, letting them know that Building 2 was secure and there was no need to evacuate. If you were in the midst of evacuation, that you could then use the reentry doors or elevators to return to your offices. And he stated again that Building 2 was secure. Now, this could have proved to have been a completely disastrous decision, but less than 5 minutes later, Port Authority Police Sergeant Al Davona issued orders to commence the evacuation of both towers. And just 1 minute later, Captain Anthony Whitaker would expand that evacuation to include all civilians in the World Trade Center complex, which consisted of a total of 7 buildings. As more and more cameras went live to show this freak accident, another Boeing 767, United Airlines Flight 175, appeared above the city skyline. Cameras centered on this second plane. And this time, all of America was watching as that flight turned quickly and headed directly into the South Tower. A billow of fire and smoke erupted as the flight crashed into the tower around the 60th floor. There were 51 passengers, 9 crew, and 5 hijackers on board. The time is now 9:03 a.m., and this is the moment that everyone knew that America was under attack. Now that day, I sat in my second grade classroom watching everything unfold. We tuned in just minutes before the second plane came into contact with the tower. And to this day, I thank my educators so much for allowing me to bear witness to these events that have shaped so much of my life. Now, as soon as the second flight struck the South Tower, the NYPD requested to shut off all airspace above New York City. The NYPD also called for a second Level 4 mobilization, bringing its total deployment to nearly 2,000 officers. The New York City Fire Department issued its 5th alarm for the South Tower, deploying several hundred additional firefighters to the disaster. Additional companies and off-duty personnel from across the metropolitan area traveled to the scene. Around 8:42 a.m., United Airlines Flight 93 departed the runway from Newark International Airport after a short delay due to traffic. Shortly after takeoff, the plane was hijacked. The passengers and the crew finally stormed the cockpit and attempted to take the plane back. This is where the very famous "Let's roll" line has come from. This is also when United Airlines Flight 93 crashed in a field near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, just 20 minutes flying time from Washington, D.C. There were 33 passengers, 7 crew, and 4 hijackers on board. Now, on this particular day, President George W. Bush was visiting an elementary school in Sarasota, Florida. He's notified at 8:50 a.m., and along with his advisors, think that the first plane flew into the towers was an isolated accident. At 9:05, the president is told by his chief of staff, Andrew Card, that a second plane has crashed into the World Trade Center. At 9:30, President Bush, before leaving the school, made remarks calling these attacks a national tragedy and informing people that he had spoken with several officials, including the U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney, New York Governor George Pataki, and FBI Director Robert S. Mueller III. "Terrorism against our country will not stand," he stated. By 9:36 a.m., the president and his staff leave the school and board Air Force One. The president wanted to return immediately to Washington, D.C., but his staffers recommended Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana as a secure location for landing. Once the plane takes off, no one outside of Air Force One knows where it's headed. Now, back in New York, Mayor Rudy Giuliani arrives at the NYPD command post near the World Trade Center at 9:05, just 2 minutes after the second flight has crashed into the South Tower. By 9:30, the mayor's emergency management office, which was located in Building 7 of the World Trade Center, is evacuated as Secret Service agents report of a possibility of additional hijacked planes. As all parts of the World Trade Center begin evacuations, reports come in at 9:37 a.m. that American Airlines Flight 77 has crashed into the Pentagon. There are 53 passengers, 6 crew, and 5 hijackers on board. 125 military and civilian personnel are on the ground. At 9:42 a.m., the Federal Aviation Administration grounds all flights. This means all planes inside the United States airspace were forced to land at the nearest airports. Flights over the ocean had to make the decision to either turn around or divert to countries like Canada or Mexico. At 9:45 a.m., evacuations take place of the White House and the U.S. Capitol, where the House of Representatives and the Senate are in session. Now, I want to take a moment to step away from the timelines and events happening in New York City and D.C. to discuss how other parts of the country were affected. As the day continues, officials across the country begin to close off buildings and bridges and other public spaces. Even large buildings outside of the United States are closed. The United Nations headquarter building, most skyscrapers in New York, all state capitol and government buildings and federal buildings in D.C., even the television and movie studios in Hollywood, California are closed. Walt Disneyland, California made the call to remain closed as they were a few time zones behind us here in the Eastern Time, so it was roughly 6 a.m. at that time. But Walt Disney World in Orlando fell under the same time zone as New York, and the park had already opened for the day. Disney executives quickly agreed, though, that the parks had to close. And this is when things become chaotic for Disney. There are reports that the Disney World Railroad stopped mid-route. It informed guests that they would have to deboard at the next station. Restaurants and shops immediately closed, and employees informed visitors that they had to leave. And in all this confusion, some guests started to get angry as they were unaware of what was going on in the outside world. And at the same time, people began to panic as they learned of these outside events. People began to worry what could happen at one of the largest travel destinations in the world. Now, this is when, for the first time ever, while there were guests on park, that the regular Disney World soundtrack stopped playing and the park fell silent. This is when they played an announcement, letting everyone know that the Magic Kingdom and all the Disney parks were closed, and that they needed to go to the nearest exit. At that time, the Disney World cast members walked hand in hand, creating a human wall, not touching the guests, but forcing them all to exit the park. Now, you have to think, this is when things get even crazier for Disney. Every single park they have has just dumped all of their guests out, and they all are waiting for transit back to their hotels or to get out of the parking lots. And to Disney's credit, they did keep open their resorts, and they assisted with guests that were stranded because of their canceled flights. Now, Walt Disney World and Disneyland both reopened with increased security measures on September 12th, just one day after the attacks. Now, back at New York, after the South Tower was impacted, over 100,000 people tried to evacuate from Lower Manhattan alone. However, the Port Authority had closed all of the bridges and tunnels in their jurisdiction. MTA had also closed their tunnels and bridges. As a result, people were either stranded in Lower Manhattan or either tried to evacuate on the East River crossings like the Brooklyn Bridge. Now, TVs across the world showed as thousands of people showed up at the lower Hudson River piers to try to evacuate. And this is when civilian and military vessels came together to help. Multiple ferry lines like the Staten Island Ferry and the Sea Streak helped in evacuation from the Manhattan shoreline, along with personal vessels. Multiple news outlets praised this maritime coordination and evacuation, It was the largest maritime evacuation conducted in the history of the United States. You can actually find more information on this maritime evacuation in a documentary released in 2011 called Boat Float, The Untold Tale of 9/11 Resilience. Now at 9:59 a.m., 56 minutes after impact, the South Tower collapsed in just 10 seconds. More than 800 civilians and first responders inside the building and the surrounding area are killed as a result of the collapse. A cloud of ash and debris cover Lower Manhattan. People ran in every direction to escape the consuming cloud of ash. People hid under cars or took refuge in stores as the sun disappeared and total darkness fell upon the city. When the South Tower collapsed, the continuity of the government procedure was activated. This procedure is established to protect high-level government officials during national emergencies. Now, this is the first of only two times in American history that this procedure has been activated. The second being the insurrection of the U.S. Capitol building on January 6th of 2021. At 10:15 a.m., the E-ring of the Pentagon's west-facing side collapses. At 10:28 a.m., the North Tower collapsed, 102 minutes after impact. More than 1,600 people are killed as a result of the attack on the North Tower. By this time, most of Manhattan is without power. The phone lines are jammed as thousands of people are making calls for help or calls to loved ones. By 11:02 a.m., the New York City mayor orders an evacuation of all of Lower Manhattan. The mayor then travels north, where he makes a temporary headquarters at the NYC Police Academy. At 12:16 p.m., the last flight in the United States lands. It took 2.5 hours to clear the U.S. airspace of the estimated 4,500 commercial and general aviation planes. Air Force One would stop at Burksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana around 11:45 and land again at Outfit Air Force Base in Nebraska around 2:50 p.m. It would make its final flight of the day and land at Andrews Air Force Base, where the president would take a private helicopter back to the White House. He would address the nation at 8:30 p.m. and state that all resources will go into finding who is responsible for this attack. Now, once the dust settled in New York, rescue workers and journalists began to refer to the site in New York as Ground Zero. Ground Zero is typically used to describe the devastation caused by an atomic bomb. At this point, all efforts shifted from evacuation to rescue. All over Lower Manhattan, people were injured from the collapses of the towers. As rescuers make their way to the rubble, by 12:30, a group of 14 survivors are located in the ruins of the North Tower's Stairwell B. As the day continues, rescuers continue to converge onto Ground Zero. Special tools are brought in to search the voids, stairwells, and elevators that might shelter survivors. By 3 p.m., the New York City Fire Department rescued Port Authority employee Pascal Buzzelli. He was helping evacuate the tower when it collapsed. He was somewhere between the 13th and 22nd floor when the tower fell. He crouched into the fetal position. When he awoke hours later, he was on a slab of building debris, 15 feet above the ground. 20 survivors total were pulled from the rubble. Janelle Guzman McMillan was a Port Authority secretary. She was one of them. More than an hour after the first plane hit, she followed others into Stairwell B from the 64th floor. As she continued to get closer to ground level, she felt increasingly certain that she would reach her boyfriend waiting for her on the streets. When she reached what she believes was the 13th floor, she stopped to take off her high heels. This is when she thought she lost her balance. The walls burst inward, and she was now hurtling towards the ground with tons of steel and concrete. When she comes to rest on her side, her head is wedged between building materials. Her right arm is pinned to her body and her leg is crushed. Under her was a soft spot. She realizes a dead body. She remained there for the next 27 hours. She was in the dark, in complete silence most of that time. She began to speak to God. And then at 9:15 a.m. on September 12th, a German shepherd named Takar, located her scent. She would be the last person rescued from the rubble. At or around 9:30 p.m. on September 11th, 2001, George Tenet, director of the Central Intelligence Agency, told the president and the U.S. senior officials inside the bunker underneath the White House that the CIA's Counterterrorism Center had determined that Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda were behind the September 11th attacks. Now, as work continued on Ground Zero, the New York Department of Transportation and the New York Department of Sanitation worked to clear a perimeter of the World Trade Center site. Crushed cars, debris, and other large obstacles are moved to allow passage of emergency crew and construction equipment to the site. Companies like Con Edison and Verizon work to restore power and communication services in Lower Manhattan. On Staten Island, the Fresh Kills landfill had been permanently closed and was slated to reopen as a park at some point in the future. But shortly before sunrise on September 12th, the property was reopened to provide an area for investigators to analyze and research the wreckage of the World Trade Center. Over the next 10 months, over 1 million tons of World Trade Center material would be transported by truck and barge to the Fresh Kills landfill for sorting. The same morning, the Arlington County Fire Department, along with other regional firehouses, battled the blaze inside the Pentagon. Now, while this is happening, many U.S. Department of Defense employees returned to work in the unaffected half of the building. President George W. Bush arrived to thank the hardworking first responders and others who had arrived to assist. By early evening, the fire was under control, but not completely extinguished. FEMA, along with members of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and firefighters, had begun to fortify the structure the day of the attack, allowing for joint FBI, FEMA, and military teams to recover remains, evidence, and property. The FBI, the National Transportation Safety Board, the Pennsylvania State Police, the Somerset County Coroner's Office, and others searched the crash site of United Airlines Flight 93 for victims and criminal evidence. The Federal Disaster Mortuary Operational Response Team arrived on September 13th to begin the process of identifying remains. Now, back in New York City, on September 13th, while digging through rubble of 6 World Trade Center, construction worker Frank Selecha found what would be known as the Ground Zero Cross. This steel crossbeam section would come to be the locus for the interfaith religious services and solace for many workers. It was moved to different places during the recovery process, and it now calls home inside the 9/11 Museum, located at the original site. On September 13th of 2001, the U.S. airspace reopened with increased airport security checkpoints, a slew of arrested airports, and many anxious passengers. Several airports had to deal with canceled flights by airlines, and some airports remained closed for additional days after the attack. But slowly, America got back to what it would consider its new normal. Airlines would begin to reinforce cockpit doors as soon as October that same year, and most major airlines were required to have these new doors on all new and existing planes by 2003. New York's subway system stopped the day of the attacks, and once the subway system was reopened, it was a huge headache for commuters. Several stations and lines were damaged or completely destroyed during the attacks. The IRT Broadway 7th Avenue line ran directly below the World Trade Center between Chambers and Rector Street. It was the most crippled. The Cortlandt Street station, located under the World Trade Center, was badly damaged and had to be rebuilt. There was flooding on the line south of 34th Street, but after the flooding was cleaned up and minimal service was restored, it would take more than a year before the New York subway system would operate normally again. Increased security had become the forefront of air travel across the world. It's been 20 years since that fateful day, And over the years, people have come together to heal and share their stories. Movies like Tiger Cruise, Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, and Flight 93 were all inspired from the events that took place on that day. There are countless documentaries, videos, podcasts everywhere, even outside of the United States. In 2012, the musical Come From Away opened in Canada. In 2013, it went on to have record-breaking runs in the United States. It continued to play across the United States and Canada, and on March 12, 2017, Come From Away opened on Broadway. And overnight, it was a total success. Now, the show is set in the week following the attacks of 9/11, as 38 planes land in the small town of Gander in the province of Newfoundland. The characters in the musical are based on and named after real residents and some of the 7,000 passengers stranded there. The musical goes on to show audiences that in a time of great sorrow, how a town outside of America welcomed anyone with open arms to seek a safe place. On March 11th of 2002, 88 searchlights were installed and arranged to form two beams of light shooting straight up into the sky. This was called Tribute in Light. It was lit every day at dusk until April 14th of 2002. Now, the lights have been lit every year on the anniversary of the event. And after the attack, Mayor Rudy Giuliani, Governor George Pataki, and President George W. Bush vowed to rebuild the World Trade Center site. As of September of 2020, the following structures on the site include the One World Trade Center. Construction started on April 27th of 2006, and the building was complete November 3rd of 2014. World Trade Center 1 is the tallest building in the United States and the tallest in the Western Hemisphere. 2, World Trade Center, which is not completed. 3, World Trade Center, which was started on November 10th of 2010 and completed on June 11th of 2018. 4, World Trade Center, started on January 22nd and completed on November 13th of 2013. 5, World Trade Center, approved plans of September 9th, 2011, estimated to be complete and built by 2028. 7, World Trade Center, started on May 7th of 2002 and completed on May 23rd, 2006. The National September 11th Memorial, which started in March of 2006 and was completed on September 11th, 2011. The National September 11th Museum, which was started on March 13th, 2006 and completed by May 21st, 2014. The World Trade Center Transportation Hub, started on April 26th of 2010 and completed on March 3rd, 2016. The Ronald O. Perlman Performing Arts Center, started on August 3rd of 2017, estimated complete in 2023. The World Trade Center Vehicle Security Center, started on November 10th of 2011 and completed sometime in 2017. Liberty Park. Construction started on November 20th of 2013 and completed on June 29th of 2016. The St. Nicholas Greek Orthodox Church, started October 8th of 2014. Estimated complete September 11th, 2021. And Flitterman Hall, started March of 2008 and completed on August 27th, 2012. Now, before 9/11, the U.S. was not officially engaged in any war. Few people had heard of Al-Qaeda or Osama bin Laden, and ISIS wasn't even a thing. Now, after the attacks, we saw deportations rise, increased public surveillance across the country, and we started removing our shoes to board planes. Now, I want to take a moment to answer some of the most common questions asked about 9/11, and this information is taken directly from the 9/11 Memorial website. What was the World Trade Center? The World Trade Center was a 16-acre commercial complex in Lower Manhattan that contained 7 buildings, a large plaza, an underground shopping mall that connected all 6 of the buildings. The centerpiece of the complex were the Twin Towers. What is Islam? Islam is the world's second largest religion. An adherent of an Islam is Muslim. Islam's beliefs and practices center around 2 key sources, the Quran and the Hadith. The Quran contains what Muslims believed is God's final revelation, made to the Prophet Muhammad, Islam's founder, more than 1,400 years ago. The Hadith is a collection of Muhammad's sayings and deeds during his life. What is an Islam extremist? Islamists see Islam as a guiding ideology for politics and the organization of society. That is, they believe that strict adherence to religious law should be the sole basis for the country's law, as well as its cultural and social life. Now, while some Muslims believe this, many do not. Islamist extremists believe that violence is acceptable to achieve these ends. And Al-Qaeda is one of many Islamist extremist groups. What is Al-Qaeda? Al-Qaeda is an international Islamist extremist terrorist network founded in the late 1980s by Osama bin Laden, who was killed in the U.S. military operation on May 1st of 2011, and others who were involved in the war against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. Their aim had been to overthrow the governments in the Middle East and elsewhere in the Muslim world, which did not strictly enforce a religiously sanctioned political and social order. Attacks against the United States were intended to reduce the American support for many of these governments. The U.S. support was viewed by Al-Qaeda as a major obstacle to creating global order under Islamic authority. Now, Al-Qaeda have also claimed the responsibility of numerous terrorist attacks since the early 1990s, including the 1998 U.S. embassy bombings in Kenya and Tanzania, the 2000 attack on the USS Cole, and the 9/11 attacks. They've also aligned themselves with and inspired other terrorist groups who have carried out attacks, including the 2002 Bali bombing, the 2004 Madrid train bombing, the 2005 London bombings, and the 2008 Mumbai terrorist attacks, along with many others. Why did the terrorists attack the World Trade Center and the Pentagon? Now, the terrorists did not have the capacity to destroy the United States military, so they set their sights on the symbolic targets instead. The Twin Towers, as centerpieces of the World Trade Center, symbolized globalization and America's economic power and prosperity. The Pentagon, as the headquarters of the U.S. Department of Defense, serves as a symbol as the American military power. It is thought that United Flight 93 was headed to the Capitol building, the center of America's legislative government. Al-Qaeda hoped that by attacking these symbols of American power, that they would promote widespread fear throughout the country and severely weaken the United States' standing in the world's community, ultimately supporting their political religious goals in the Middle East and the Muslim world. And lastly, where did the terrorists come from? 15 of the 19 terrorists were from Saudi Arabia. 2 were from the United Arab Emirates. 1 was from Lebanon. And 1 was from Egypt. Now you can find more information, droves of more information, if you go to 911memorial.org. You can learn, connect, and support the Memorial Fund. Now, there's so much history here. so much that I've left unspoken. But with the events unfolding live around us, this is where I want today's topic to end. One day I may return to this subject and explain so much more. I feel that it is super important for all of us, American or not, to remember what happened that day. How it changed the entire world as we know it. Some of you listening will remember exactly where you were and what you were doing. And some of you may not even been thought of or brought into existence yet. We can't change what happened. We can't go back and erase history. But we are responsible for creating our future. One where we can stand together as human beings and look to the bright horizons of the future. But it is up to each and every one of us never to forget what happened on that day, what everyone has done in the last 20 years. We can't forget that, but we have to look to our future. Until next time, stay safe and stay educated.